Thanks for tuning into Nestorius Public Radio. Hey, I'm your host, Nestor Rodriguez, a.k.a.
Yo, the warm fuzzy, who is he, who was he, Nestor. Yo, you better check your local listings. Yo, he's dropping two twin turbine pistons.
Yo, that's the Jewish version, Nestor. Nestor.
Hey, Nestor, where's the tuna?
Hey, yo. We got a crazy show today. We're recording this shit from beautiful, sunny, warm, and fuzzy North Hollywood, California. We're doing this shit at Jam Master James Studios. Yeah, man. Give it up for my Negro right there. What's up, James?
What up?
Yeah. James is my podfather. I know you guys may have heard me say this shit in the past. I started doing a podcast with James over Kevin Smith's Smodcast internet radio station, The Breaks. So come on over and check that show out. We've been doing that shit for almost 2 years. But anyway, we wanted to have James as one of our guests. So big up for James. What's up, baby?
What up? Glad to have you guys in the house today.
Yeah. We got my man Rich. What's up, Rich?
What's up, everybody? How you doing?
That's right. Tonight, we're going to be talking mad quantities of shit. We're going to continue our conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago on tipping. We're going to keep it brief. You know, after we left the show 2 weeks ago, we kept on the dialogue. We're going to talk about Disneyland, man. Disneyland got some scandals going on. We're going to talk about Michael Douglas's cunnilingual cancer. We got some Israeli ass. Some Israeli chicks in the military pull down their pants. I just want to let my listeners know where they can check out the photos, because let me tell you something, this is some serious advertising for the military. I would have joined. Well, right off the bat, man, Rich, you were telling me some shit about the IRS.
Oh, yeah.
Some more. We talked about the IRS.
I was listening to that AM radio shit, and they were talking about some stuff, so I started listening a little bit.
Yeah,
and guess what? The IRS, with all that stuff, they've got a nice, big, fucking fucking microscope right up their ass, man.
Really?
Yeah, because we're finding a lot of great things about the IRS, you know, and I was kind of backing them, saying, hey, you know, maybe they should fucking, you know, target people who, I don't know, who are seeking tax exemption, because they're the ones who don't want to pay fucking taxes. Makes sense, doesn't it? But now it seems that they are misappropriating their funds in the form of, well, I don't know, $50 million on conferences over the past, like, 2-3 years. Between 2010 and 12, they spent $50 million.
$50
million. Check this out.
They have an expense, right? Expense account?
They do. Right. They have to spend money, I guess, to make money, they have to spend money to steal your money. But this is what happened. They had a conference down in Anaheim. Okay.
Oh shit! Appropriately so, because we're gonna be talking about Disneyland. That's
there
the whole
you go.
Anaheim.
So yeah. So they went down there. They spent $4 million. $4 million for a conference in Anaheim in 2010.
Do you guys remember when $1 million was a big deal?
Hold on.
No, but
This is the IRS
spending
$5 million?
$4 million.
$4 million.
Yeah, for a conference.
Who the fuck was invited to that shit?
Well, let's see. They had 2,600 attendees
receiving
benefits, including baseball tickets and stays in presidential suites that normally cost $1,500 to $3,500 per night.
Who's doing this investigation?
Well,
the Tea Party? Yeah, because if the Tea Party is doing the investigation, hold on.
It's Daryl Issa. He's a
big the fuck up to the Tea Party if you're going to investigate the IRS, you motherfucker.
Those in glass houses should not throw stones.
So wait a minute, because I got to tell you something. I know that I've said this before, but I went to New York a couple weeks ago to do an audit, which isn't finished, by the way, but this is good information. And when I went in there, my agent was saying, we would normally use that room over there, but the bosses are throwing a breakfast for the employees because they did really good this month. And I was like, really? Are we invited to breakfast? Because that's my motherfucking money that's being spent
there.
That's
your dime, man.
So I thought, oh, wow, they throw office parties. But now you're talking about $4 million fucking extravaganza.
For one event. And check
how
it out.
How many people were there?
The agency, they didn't even negotiate.
You said 2,600.
2,600. They didn't even negotiate lower room rates. It's pretty much... And that's their policy. It's standard government practice to, you know, try and get
Whoa, 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 whoa. So I have a business. So as a business owner, whenever I go anywhere, of course, I ask, you know, I go to Expedia. I try to get the lowest rate. Even though it's a tax write-off when I do business, I still want to save as much money as I can.
Right.
So here these cocksuckers are taking our fucking tax money. Not only are they spending it, fucking $4 million for 2,600 douchebags, right, to go to Anaheim, and they don't even look for the lowest rate.
It's a fucking slap in the face to everybody that they're taking money from. Anyway, essentially, they're pretty much doing what all the big banks did during all that shit, taking private jets and saying, oh, we don't have any money, or we need to take your money, and just pretty much fucking using your money to big up, to live the big up life.
Unbelievable. So that's the who is this guy that did this investigation, and how accurate?
It's a government watchdog.
Big up your fucking government watchdog, motherfucker, cocksucker. Big up.
You will hear me say that a lot.
Big up for fucking investigating the IRS, those bloody cunts. You fucking cunt man.
Hey, here, there's a chairman of that committee, which they don't. Look, I can't even find in the fucking thing. But Daryl Issa, he's a Republican from California.
Good for him.
He also released excerpts of congressional investigators' interviews with employees of the IRS office in Cincinnati.
Listen.
Daryl, big up. Daryl Issa.
He's the whistleblower on this.
No, so they all do the same thing. I mean, the governors, the politicians, they're all buying prostitutes in the Philippines, hanging out, doing coke off each other's tits. I mean, it's called the United States Senate. I mean, when you vote, let's talk about when you vote, you get to decide which rapist you're putting in charge. Is it the one that likes to dress up in leather and get spanked in the underground, you know what I mean, by the madam? Or are you electing the other rapist who likes to go on Craigslist and find little boys? The problem is not with the United States government. The problem is we have none.
Well, I mean, look at this. Look, they paid some fucker $17,000 to talk about leadership through art at the IRS.
Hey, guys, I have a leadership through art speech. Like, if you really want to be the leader, then you got to convince people to pay you $17,000 to talk about this shit.
I don't even mind.
That's why you're the leader.
I wouldn't even be pissed at the guy who took the money.
No, he's
the leader. Done the same thing.
That's how you get to be the leader.
You morons. Oh, yeah, I'll take your fucking money, and then I'll jerk off with it all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
right. And this is
imagine you just go around
leadership
doing
throughout my fucking balls.
this is seriously like that. That's right there. I mean, I fooled you into fucking.
Fuck you! It's magic.
Imagine being like a motivational speaker. You go from convention to convention. You book out like a comedian. You book your weekends. You get $17,000 to go talk, and then you get a snort blow off senators' chests and, you know, suck dick in a hot tub of some other guy. You know, like what senators do, and Republicans, congressmen,
that's ridiculous.
Democrats.
Look
you get
how
to
hard
have their wild gay fetish parties.
Look how hard
Furby,
presidential fight.
Furby parties.
Look how hard they fight for these positions. And when you look at that, when you go to the breakdown about how much they supposedly make, it's not that much money to be fighting that hard to be, you know, a senator or Republican or anything like that. It's the fucking parties that they're after. It's the power that
they
have.
No, they have a lot of parties. They bring in, sometimes they truck in little Filipino boys that look like girls. And
it's
they
the under the bathroom stall
kilts.
Frolicking.
Yeah,
that
that's what a lot of
about.
Our government money's going to. Underage sex parties where they dress midgets in kilts. That's how I feel about our governors. And politicians, by the way, if anyone's listening. That's exactly. There's just a bunch of child molesters. Think about it. How many of them are there? How many sex scandals do they have every month? Like, if you took that out into the regular public, like, everyone at your office building would be like, oh,
but it's ridiculous.
But it goes to the point where it's just so hilarious, though. That's like, I'm against gays, you know, and all this, or I'm family values. And
I won't
it turns out 3 weeks later, oh, by the way, I'm gay.
I won't vote
young
for
Filipino boys rule.
I won't. I don't want to vote. So this is what politics campaigning is like. It's like two kids like saying like, no, you stole the ball. No, it's my ball. No, give me back the ball. Because they never sit there and come out with a commercial about what they're going to do or what they're about. It's always my candidate I'm running against once said, misquoted in a newspaper, we think, with a highlighted line, and we're supposed to believe this horse shit, bullshit. Yeah, big down.
Because that's what people respond to, though, these days. Though, because of, you know, That's what they respond to because they watch too much of the Kardashians. Because that's the level. No, that's the level that the society has been dumbed down to. So, well, you know, they have to come to a level that the people will understand, and that is essentially mudslinging. And you know,
we're in Anaheim. We're talking about Anaheim. Okay.
So, nice segue.
So, yeah. We're in Anaheim. No, because
audience, close your eyes.
No, we're
go with us to Anaheim.
No. I just can't believe that the IRS did this thing in Anaheim because Disneyland has been in the news lately.
Oh yeah,
right. They have the scheme entitled "Families Hire Disabled Guide to Bypass Lines."
That's the shit.
Did you hear about this report?
Yes.
So basically, the rich will hire handicapped people to go to Disneyland with them and wait on the lines. So, actually, they don't even have to wait on the lines. They can just go right in because they're handicapped.
Every rich family should have their own handicapped person.
So,
it's the new future.
You can park at the grocery store.
It's the new American dream.
And
again, we're helping the most, you know, poorest of the wretched of the society.
Well, here's the deal. An investigating news that a handful of upper-crust Manhattan moms, this is Manhattan, New York City, have a pricey secret way to get their kids to the front of the lines, and it's not by bribing Mickey Mouse. I thought maybe it was by sliding your finger up Mickey Mouse's ass.
Remember a couple weeks ago on the show we were talking about the difference between like a California LA scheme or a New York scheme? That's a New York scheme.
Right, yeah.
It involves airplane travel. It involves grabbing a retard. It involves lines. It involves public. It involves, like, that's a scheme. Well, like, an LA thing is you just pull your gun over like, yo, let me on the ride.
Yeah. This is fucked up. It's handicapped people, right? So instead of waiting on lines, according to New York Post, the moms pay $130 an hour to hire a disabled black market guide who uses her position. Of course, we're going to say she's a female, who uses their position sitting in a motorized scooter to help entitled families gain special access to
brilliant.
Rides.
I love it. Not, brilliant on all levels.
Nestor, look at how much it costs to get a front-of-the-line pass for your fucking family.
Yeah.
How much does... So scroll down. It's like
brilliant.
$350 to get a front-of-the-line pass. The rich people are actually making a fucking... They're coming out ahead. And, you know, the retard gets some work, too.
For a handicapped person to make $130 a day and get to go to Disneyland?
An hour.
Who's taking this...
An hour.
Who's taking this person... Who's paying this handicapped person $130 an hour or taking this kid to Disneyland? And he sits in and he put on a VCR and he drools in a corner.
Hold on.
Getting out of the house.
All right. It's insider knowledge that very few have and share carefully, Martin told the Post. So when you're doing it, you're affirming that you are one of the privileged insiders who has and shares this information. You're also getting a good deal. As VIP tours offered by Disney, which include speed passes, start at $315 an hour.
I'm assuming
that that's for the whole family. Right? $315 an hour.
Mickey Mouse and the Hearst can suck my handicapped dick.
I say, dude, this is what I say. This is what I would do. This would be the Jewish way to do it. You're like, you grab one of your kids that's a little lanky, you'd be like, you, get in the scooter. We're not paying $130 an hour. I'm making one of my kids disabled for the day.
That's what I'm saying.
No, but it's brilliant. I mean, you got the money to spend. What's this lady going to do? Spend another $130 on a bottle of lipstick?
They're just pissed off because Disney's getting undercut, man.
Right.
That's the fucking thing. No, Disney is not. They're just pissed because they're not getting their $315 an hour.
I think that's the issue.
That's the bottom line.
I think that's the issue. I think you're 100% right.
I think we should really start to adopt, you know, have the discussion as a society on what are other ways we can use handicapped people to help us with our daily lives.
Yeah.
Don't make me bust a handicap in your ass.
I think Walt Disney would be proud of that.
In other news with Disney, there was a loaded gun was found on Disney World ride by woman with her grandson. Lake Buena Vista, Florida. A Walt Disney World patron on a ride with her grandson found a loaded gun on her seat, officials said Wednesday. Officials said that the woman found the pistol on the dinosaur ride at Animal Kingdom. The woman turned over the loaded weapon to a park attendant who then contacted her manager and authorities. The gun's owner, Angelo Lista, told authorities he discovered his gun was missing several minutes after leaving the ride. He has a concealed weapons permit. Lisa told authorities he didn't know Disney
Not
World
anymore.
Patrons.
Yeah.
He didn't know Disney World patrons weren't allowed to bring guns.
You know?
He said he thought the security checkpoint at the entrance to the Florida theme park was only so that the guards could check bags for bombs or explosives. Patrons do not walk through metal detectors, nor are they subject to pat downs. So that's
Dude,
interesting.
I don't want to leave my. Thanks. I'm bringing my gun to
Thanks.
Disneyland. If
Thanks,
I know.
Fucking Angelo. Now we're all gonna have to fucking get an anal cavity search every time we go to a goddamn theme park. Now, you son of a bitch.
I'm not going
are
to Disney
you
World.
Fucking
gun.
Keep your goddamn hands on your fucking gun. Don't
you,
fucking. That, I mean, seriously, that's
you,
pretty fucking
you
irresponsible.
You cocksucker. Now I'm gonna have to take my shoes off when I go into Disneyland. You motherfucker. Anyway, so we were talking about Disney earlier, and I don't know if anybody knows, but underneath Disney World and Disneyland, there's a whole city, right? Disneyland has its own police force, its own fire department. But yeah, they have a jail. They have a Disneyland jail underneath, which is a fucking trip. So basically, there's a Disneyland has a total of 6 large jail cells, not located underneath. They are there to hold inmates that disturb, destroy property, kidnappers for the time being, waiting for Anaheim PD to show up.
Kidnappers?
So, yeah. This is in Disneyland, so. And apparently there's a private restaurant there also called Club 33, where people who have a lot of money or celebrities and all that stuff don't.
It's an
have
Illuminati
to,
club.
Right. Well, people don't.
Mickey has trouble getting in.
Well,
sometimes.
People don't have to celebrities or whatever. They don't have to eat with the rest of the assholes.
Yeah.
Like Angelo.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
What
Mickey
I mean?
And like Goofy can get in, but some of like the newer characters have some. You know, you got to prove yourself.
The creme de la creme get to
yeah,
dine
Pocahontas
on Walt.
Yeah, Pocahontas always gets discriminated
they get to Walt,
against.
They get she to never, dine on Walt Disney's frozen thigh meat.
Yeah.
Only the select few know about the special menu. Yeah. It's off menu, but you know what to ask for.
Club 33 is a private club in New Orleans Square. You must be a member or the guest of a member to dine there. Last I heard, they were not even accepting applications for membership. Wait time was over 10 years. A corporate membership was a bit over $20,000 plus around $6,000 a year. I don't know about that. All this stuff sounds kind of crazy. And then somebody said that there is no underground jail, but there is a holding area. The holding area is not visible to guests, nor is it behind City Hall. There's a break room for cast members. It's in a separate building adjacent to the Bank of Main Street where the security office is. But underneath downtown Disney, under the bridge, is the Anaheim Police Department off-site location.
I actually heard there's not even just there's actually a Disney torture chamber underneath.
You're right. I heard there was a Disney S&M club that was underneath the theme park. But I'm not sure. Is this in every single
that
Disney?
That Club 33, what? Really?
Yeah.
I heard they stored eagle eggs for some reason in a vat of gold. And I don't understand what
it's
that was
Disney
all about.
Disney World and Disneyland. Of course, they're going to have everything that the rest of the world has because they want to recreate everything. I mean, hence the name. And that would back up. I mean, if you ever tried to, you know, go against them in a court of law, they'd just say, well, it's Disney World, fuckers.
I don't go to theme parks because I think for myself and I don't want to, you know, I don't enjoy rides and I can't stand being around those throngs of people that should not wear thongs.
I don't smoke Buddha and I can't stand cess.
Here's
to the people over here, to the people over there, to the people, the people, the people, people, the people, the people, people from everywhere.
Everywhere.
Here's Club 33's tagline.
To eat with Mickey, you got to have cheddar, bitch.
That's ridiculous, dude. That's crazy shit.
It is.
Whatever, we'd go. I'd go if they let me in, hanging out. Sipping on some.
Well, if somebody paid for your way, you mean you'd go.
Eating some cotton candy.
If I'm paying exorbitant amount of money to get into this fucking place,
you gotta
realize. I want a finger fucking mini. I want.
Yeah, everyone's
you know
done
I mean?
That, though.
I want
though.
Daisy Duck to
you
fucking
want a finger
juggle
mini?
My
where
balls.
Were you in the 80s? Everyone fingered Minnie in the 80s. No, but, you know, the thing about it is if you're really, really wealthy and rich, you don't want to be – I mean, if we – listen, okay, if we could afford to go to Disneyland without having to be at the pretzel line waiting for our pretzel with all the other people trying to buy a pretzel, we would do the same thing. So that's what it is. You can go to the rides, you go back to the club, you're like, peace. This is like when Johnny Depp shows up, you know.
Yeah.
Johnny, he fingered Minnie. he's Johnny Fingered Mini.
Hey, here's an interesting little thing, though, that there is a second Club 33. It's located in the Tokyo Disneyland in their New Orleans Square as well. But the funny thing is that members of Disneyland's Club 33 do not have reciprocal privileges.
Fuck Club 33.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. That's a lot of bullshit. I think, you know, first of all, I just want to say this. You know what? If you can afford to pay a handicapped person $130-something an hour to bring a scooter and wait, chaperone you and your family through any of the lines at Disneyland or Disney World, you know what I say? God bless. It's America.
That's America.
You know what I mean?
It's capitalism. Free trade. Capitalism. No. Capitalism down to its core.
It's America.
Yeah.
If you can afford that, all the power to you. Me personally, if you can afford to go eat at Club 33 for $10,000, fucking A. You know what I'm saying? Fucking A. Eat a fucking pork chop for me, okay? Eat a fucking pork chop for me. Beat the fuck up, you rich motherfuckers that can afford to pay a homeless, toothless fuck to wait on the lines for you. Beat the fuck up to you fucking retarded rich fucks that can afford to eat at Club 33 where I wouldn't fucking have diarrhea in the bathroom. Big up to you fucks. Big up to you capitalistic cocksuckers. Big the fuck up. That's what America is all about. Big up. Okay? I just want to say that me personally, you couldn't pay me to spend that much time in Disneyland or Disney World.
It's with a handicap.
It's with anybody. It's over fucking rated.
It's so stupid.
It's so fucking stupid.
It's like people that just
it's overrated. If you've
can't
done
wait,
it,
yeah.
If you've done it once in your life, then you've done it once in your life. Not a big
exactly.
fucking deal. Okay? Anybody who buys a season's pass to fucking Disneyland, you should shoot yourself. You should find Angelo fucking dickhead, get his gun, and commit suicide in It's a Small World. You should blast your fucking brain particles in fucking Space Mountain so when everyone's riding in the dark, shit splatters on them, they don't know what the fuck is hitting them. You should blast your fucking head. That's what I say. Blast your fucking head. Big up! For you dropping your fucking loaded gun there, you bomba clod, pussy clod bastard, you. Oh,
fucking idiot. What was his last name? Knotts? Was he Furley? I mean, what? Fucking, like Don Knotts fucking with the gun. This guy fucking has a permit. He's on the rides
yeah,
with his gun.
I'm not
he's
going in there with
dropping
my gun.
It.
He's what got if some his... maniac starts shooting?
Well, see, that's why they gave him one bullet and he kept it in his shirt pocket because he kept fucking leaving his fucking pistol in the fucking, you know, in the State Fair fucking Ferris wheel ride.
Yeah, the guy's fucking retarded is what he is.
They should have paid him. Well, that's how he got on the ride with the fucking gun. He was the paid idiot to fucking stand in line at the front.
Yeah.
It worked out both ways. How a retard got a gun permit out there.
Well, he owns a fucking, he's probably one of those Minutemen that try to, Angelo God. Lista. Lista's his name.
Oh, Lista.
You know, fuck you, Angelo, okay? You cocksucker. Fuck you. All right? Anyway, We're gonna be having part three of John Crash Matos's interview, the last nice. Part of a three-part interview that we have done, and conclude that interview. And thank you for tuning in and watching listening to part one and part two. Just a lot of stuff. Real quick, I just want to mention. I know this is not crazy news, and we talked about it on the other show, but Google timesofisrael.com, female soldiers show off military assets. They made a big deal about these Israeli military chicks taking off their pants and showing their G-strings and all that stuff. There's a really hot picture of four of them that they posted on Facebook serving in the military. And I don't know why the U.S. government does not use this image to recruit people to join the Army or the any leg of the armed services. I'm going to post the picture on this episode of Nestorius Public Radio on the Skid Row Studio ArtistRadios.com website. So I usually post pictures of everything that's related to whatever episode I'm talking about on the SkidRowStudios.com website. By all means, make sure that you go to iTunes and that you while you're in iTunes, search Nestorius Public Radio and subscribe. Make sure you download. The more you download, the better chances we are of getting supporters.
We need supporters. We're going to have a picnic. Right now, we don't even have a tablecloth.
I'm gonna bake some pies. I got a nice rhubarb pie recipe that I've been wanting to try out. I got a new Vitamixer. I'm going to make a nice rhubarb blend. And I'm going to use my mom's, famous pie dough recipe. You know, make a little lattice on top and stick it in the bath. Before bath of flour. And then, you know, stick it right in the oven there. Cook that shit up.
I like picnics.
Yeah.
Support for NPR is brought to you by Disney World.
That's right. Disney World, you cocksuckers. You're paying for this show, you fucking cocksuckers. So, go to what was the site that I gave you there? Anyway, just Google Israeli military ass cheeks, and you'll find it. Shit is unbelievable. Unfucking believable. It's crazy shit. So we were talking about last week, actually a few weeks ago, we were talking about tipping. And you know what? I don't know that we're going to have a hell of a lot of time because this is a big discussion earlier on. We're talking about, you know, the right for restaurants to, put a tip or a gratuity on your check. And we just basically got a little crazy,
rambunctious
about it. Actually, you know what? You know what? We're not even going to discuss that. I am going to cut this part of the fucking show out, because I'm going to edit the show. Yeah, because we don't have that much time.
Let me just say this one thing, Nestor.
Yeah.
You know, when you looked at the bill and you saw that 18% on there, and that feeling that, like, what the fuck? That's exactly how a waiter feels when he gets stiffed.
Right.
I'm serious. Yeah. That feeling of fucking...
Yeah.
So,
no, I know.
So now you know.
No.
Because your life already sucks if you're waiting tables.
If you guys...
Seriously.
If you guys were listening, but if you haven't listened, go to episode 8. We started the discussion about this. Go to episode 8, and we were talking about tipping and all the stuff. I got charged 18%, and I wasn't told. I think the crime was that the waiter didn't say to me, hey, you know, the tip is included. Okay, right. That's the crime. But then the argument was that I remember in America when there was a time when tipping was an option. And this
not
is
not anymore, motherfuckers.
Tipping was an option.
You all better tip.
And the burden of waiters having a good wage and a good compensation for their work, the burden of that was not put on the consumer. It was not put on the restaurant goer. It was put on the fucking employer. Okay? And again, the problem with America, if I can say there's a problem, one, is lack of responsibility. Everyone wants to pass the fucking buck down to somebody else. Okay? The responsibility for a waiter to get a good wage is not the fucking patron's responsibility. It's the fucking employer's responsibility. At some point in America, at some point, I don't know when it was, it was deciphered that, oh, as an employer, as a restaurant owner, I don't need to give the waiter or the wait staff a good wage because people are tipping. Because people are tipping. So let's make the fucking people, let's put the burden of a fucking waiters to have a really good salary and a good a way to make a living on the fucking restaurant goers. You know what I mean? Let me just say this one thing, okay? I tip minimum 20%. So you don't have to put your fucking thing on my check, okay?
Look, let me tell you something.
Yeah, but waiting they don't
tables,
know that.
Waiting tables in very... Waiting tables entails a lot of different steps and processes.
Right.
But the job of a waiter is sales. The 20% tip is his commission.
Right.
When you're looking at it from the waiter's perspective,
right.
When I go to your table,
That's a good point. I
say to you, I say, oh, would you like a glass of champagne, miss? And she says, yes. Ching ching, that's $18 more on the tap.
Right.
You know, when
that's
I
a
say,
good point.
So
the real good because I wait fine dining. I don't wait in little diners. Right. I wait in fine dining restaurants.
I wait at crackhead Dominican rice and bean joints.
Yeah, you eat at you eat at places that sell fish and chips and teriyaki. Yeah, like, how did those two get together?
I eat at places that make fresh tortillas. I eat at places that make fresh tortillas, okay? They make fresh tortillas, okay? They sell teriyaki, and they have fucking three-day-old
sushi.
That's
British Tokyo fusion, yo. That's the newest wave.
And they have three-day-old fucking sushi, okay?
So, what I'm saying is the skill of a waiter, what you're paying for with a waiter is, okay, what you're really paying for is you're paying someone to pace your meal.
Right.
That's where waiting comes from. It's the job of a waiter.
That's the responsibility of your boss. Okay, your boss
listen to me. Hear me out.
Yes, it is.
Do you know what I mean when I say pace your meal?
I know what the fuck you mean.
What do I mean?
Where did we meet, you and I? Where did we meet, motherfucker?
We met at my work.
We met where?
At a restaurant.
This guy sits
at my table. I'm like, shit, this guy's not even going to tip me.
At a steakhouse. Okay?
Yeah, at a steakhouse
I
work at.
What does that tell you? What does that tell you about me without you even knowing?
No, what I'm saying is you started off with an appetizer, then you have a salad.
Absolutely.
And then you have a steak that needs to be cooked at a certain time that needs a certain temperature.
Right.
The hardest part of waiting tables and what the job really is I'm pacing your meal.
Right.
I'm delivering drinks when you arrive, then I'm bringing some bread, then I'm bringing the salad.
Right.
When the salads, I clear the plates, I bring the apps, then I clear that, the steaks come, I clear it all up. I'm saying is, but where the money is made, where the actual cha-ching happens, is it's a sales job.
Right.
You go up to a table.
Good point.
You look at them, you read them.
Good point.
What did I do at your table? I listened to what you wanted.
I asked you what you gave me your opinion on what the best thing. You didn't. You listened. You're a good waiter. Okay.
Because all salesmen are good listeners.
Rich, you're a good waiter. Okay.
All good sales.
I was starting to feel like.
No, I've been waited by you. You guys are really good waiters. You're really good at what you do. You're really good salespeople. Meaning, you're not trying to fucking push some shit up my ass that I don't want.
I'm going to find out about you and find out what
say,
you like.
Okay, this is probably going to be your best bet.
You know?
And this.
That's what it comes down to.
I got you. But what's the next thing? Is it when I go to Macy's with my wife to buy a fucking couch, a pull-out couch? Macy's salespeople, they
are on commission.
Are on commission. They're selling me something. They're listening to my needs. So what's the next thing? Macy says, why don't we put the burden of the fucking commission on the buyer of the couch? You know what I'm saying? What's the next thing? In 10 years, that's what's going to happen? All I'm trying to say is that...
Here's the thing. In order for capitalism to really work, and the problem is, in order for it to really work, you have to have options. Meaning, like, no, hear my point. What I'm saying is, for instance, if you walk into a Macy's and you see that happening, then as a consumer driving the markets, you say, no, I'm not going here. I'm going to go somewhere else. So, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
That's an essential step, I would think. For...
Mild man goes in to buy a fucking steak. Two waiters attack him. They start fighting over the tip. The man gets pissed off, starts stabbing the guys in the neck, not the steak. The police come. They take him to the underground Disney jail. He gets pissed off. He urinates on It's a Small World. That's what I'm talking about.
Here's
a tip. Dad, go back to school, loser.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Anyway, listen. What I'm trying to say is that it's
small world. Nestor,
what about over in other countries? You know, Europe and everywhere.
They don't tip.
They don't tip because
everything works fine
because the employee is somewhat taken care of, and you're going to probably get better service.
Who takes care of
the employer?
Employee.
This isn't Europe.
Right. At some point in this country. At some point in this country, the burden of taking care of the worker in your field was fucking relieved of the fucking employer and forced onto the consumer.
Well,
that's my problem.
The consumer should have revolted and said, "We're not going to eat out in
No. You're putting the burden of the consumer.
No, hold on. A lot of what it was.
You're putting the burden on the consumer.
But a lot of it was society. I mean, did any point in your life did a manager ever come out and say, "You have to tip my employee"? No. Who told you to tip? Your social peers.
Yeah.
Well, it's a social peer, and you know, and different social dynamics think differently. Here in America, we believe in tipping for service, but you have a lot of people in America that are that as a people have a stereotype that they don't tip as good, you know.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, somebody delivers a refrigerator. You're going to tip them, right, Nestor?
I
hook him up with a 20 spot or something like that because he did a little service for
I
you.
I tip people
hooked it
who
up
work
just right.
extra hard,
right?
Who go out of their way to do their job. We're living in a society where no one gives a fuck
says,
about
like,
their job.
Like
no one says that. So now all of a sudden, 10 years from now, everyone who works for JCPenney, JCPenney realize, oh, well, these guys are getting paid. They get $20 tips or $10 tips. So you know what? We're not going to pay them $15 an hour to deliver furniture. We're going to give them $3 an hour because they're already making $200 in tips.
That's what's already happened.
That's bullshit.
Nestor,
listen, the eventual price
blame society.
The eventual price in some way, shape, or form is going to trickle down into the end consumer. If they said, oh, well, we're going to – meaning like if you didn't pay the tip, they would charge you more for the salmon. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
They're going to come up with the money some way,
yeah.
shape, or form.
No.
It's the only way for the business to work.
No, I know.
If you look at how many restaurants go under. This isn't just like, I mean, don't necessarily just think this is a fat cow sitting on their, you know.
I just think it's bullshit. Hey, listen, you know what? We're going to wrap this up. I'm going to bring this
bring
over
it up.
To John Crash Matos Part 3 interview.
This is John Crash Matos, and you are listening to Nestorius Public Radio.
So you're a prolific, highly successful artist. You're a highly successful husband, and you.
I don't know about that part, but yeah.
No. You're Puerto Rican, and you're married 25 years. That's like a straight up anomaly.
I mean, I said to a friend of mine, and he laughs. I said, but 25 years, right? If you're a lifer in jail, don't you get paroled?
Yeah.
Don't they give you a suit and $15?
I'm not sure what they give you anymore, but you know, this is my 20th wedding anniversary year myself.
All right, so you got 5 more years before you get paroled. I'm
hoping. Yeah. You know? Well, I have a theory. Seriously, I have a theory about marriage. Mm. People nowadays they get married and then they get divorced in like a year, two, or five.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And they make the rest of us guys that stick with it look bad.
Correct.
You know what I mean? I think that the government should give us a stipend for every year that you're married, both the man and the woman. Right.
Yeah, but see, them getting divorced is what keeps the law institution, you know, making money.
The divorce law institution.
Yeah,
but I'm saying they should have like
it's the economy. We're not supporting the economy.
But I'm saying they should have like, you know, a married man islands fund. You know, like you get to go on a vacation just the guys.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. That's called parole.
That's your parole.
I don't even get a watch.
That should be funded by the government though. Like, I mean, you know, you and these fucking people, they get married for like a year or two, like these famous people. I don't even want to mention their names because they're retarded,
yeah.
You know, and then that's news, you know what I mean? 72
days,
that's news. 72 days, that person should contribute to that to that married man island fund. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I got you.
There should be some sort of a penalty. All right, so penalty, I'm serious. I want to talk about Eric Clapton.
All right.
I've met Eric Clapton. I love Eric Clapton. Anybody who knows of Eric Clapton's music, come on. What's there not to, you know, to like? The man's a fucking genius. You know what I mean? So I read that you met Eric Clapton, in the 90s or something? Or early 2000?
No, I met him 1996.
A friend, he was looking to do some sort of collaboration with street art.
Correct. He was actually, he had just finished recording a CD of like street music, beats, all this, you know, weird stuff. With a producer and a collaborator, and he had come to New York to shoot areas for video. And he had heard about me. He wanted to try and see how he could meet me. So he was in a restaurant with one of his managers, and you know, the conversation came up. My name came up, and it turns out that one of the waitresses. Thank you. Wrong airline here. the waitress was a friend of mine.
Oh, wow.
So she, you know, she said, look, I know him. I know how to get in contact with him. So she called me, and she said, look, a musician I know wants to contact you. Can I give you a number? I guess, sure. So she did, and then She called me back and told me who it was. I'm like, yeah, right.
So a musician.
Yeah. So then the following morning, he called me.
So at that point, you knew his music. I mean, you're familiar with his music. You're a kid of the 60s.
I was a huge, huge fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from Cream days and all that.
Cream, yeah, up until, I mean, up to the album that I thought was, like, really amazing was an album called August.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Man's a genius. He's one of the most amazing guitarists. So anyway, Fender Stratocasters. He commissioned you to do one of his guitars, and since then there's a I mean, I googled this and there was like, I don't know, fucking how many of them? 100?
I did 50 Fender Strats, one of a kinds, and then I did about 25 or 30 Telecasters with matching amps. But wow. Then you got all the private commissions, so there's got to be 200 or 300 guitars out there.
Yo, them shits is fucking dope.
Thanks.
Seriously.
Thanks.
I remember seeing the first one, and then I remember it was almost like a catalog of I don't know, like cars that you can get this model. I mean, but they're fucking gorgeous, and they're obviously all unique, and they all pop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I also read that you mentioned private commissions, that you basically consult Eric before you go ahead and say yes.
Yeah, I did. In the very beginning. Well, you know, the first guitar I did for him wasn't a commission. It was a practical joke.
Really? How'd that come out?
Well, he's famous for his jokes. So, this had to be a God thing. I was sleeping, woke up one morning, the summer of 98, 99. I woke up, and I just told my wife, you know, I want to paint a guitar for Eric. Just like that. So, I didn't know how to, you know, to do it. So, I called some of his friends in London, and her personal assistant gave me his guitar text information. I contacted him, and I told him, you know, I want to do this, but it's got to be totally on the hush-hush. I don't want him to know. So I did the guitar, which was really interesting because I'd never done one before. I did the guitar. They prepared it. They got it ready, and they put it in a guitar case. And then what they did was he was in L.A. Recording an album with B.B. King, Writing with the King, that album. Mm. So the guitar case was in the corner of the studio. So he walks in, hey, guys, you know, what's up? And he sees a couple of guitar cases. So he asks, what's going on over here? And they told him, oh, it's a new setup, you know, you want to try it. So he opened up one case, like, oh, this is cool. Then he opened up mine and goes, what the heck is this? He opened it, and he called me, like, dude, what are you doing? And, you know, I gotcha, you know. But it backfired because he really liked it. And he used it for, like, 2 or 3 straight years. And then he commissioned me to do a guitar, and then And then
he put you in contact with Fender.
Well, Fender contacted me when they saw his stuff.
Right. That's amazing. And so what else have you done, like, on a grander scale? Not walls, not canvases, not guitars. Cars, maybe? Toothbrushes? I know you've done luggage for Toomey.
Yeah,
the Toomey. I own a piece.
Yeah, the Toomey. Oh, you do?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Poor guy. No, the Toomey thing was kind of cool because I knew Toomey, not from the luggage, but from their backpacks. So, you know, I when they contacted me, I went online and checked it out. I'm like, okay, it's kind of cool. And they were just releasing the hard cases.
Right.
So that just worked out. Dude, that was just, like, amazing how that worked out. If anything is ever God-given, that is, because that just, like, from the beginning to the end, it just was smooth. There was never an ounce of trouble.
So they called you. They said, we love your work. Would you be interested in designing, using your print as a series of our hard luggage?
Right.
And so did you design that specific image for that?
I did the painting, specifically for that. They gave me guidelines. I can't use more than 8 colors.
Because the more colors the silkscreen, the more money it costs.
It's difficult. So I did the painting with 8 colors, but unbeknownst to me, spray paint, it varies from dark to light. So, like, if you use a blue, you know, it's the same blue, but when you pull back, you got all that misting.
Right.
So that creates a degree of
a
color.
A different hue of color.
You go from dark to light, even though it's one color. So you got all that to
work. Interesting.
So it came out to, like, something like 75, 80 colors.
So, really?
So they did the 8 colors, but they did a process that they hadn't used before anywhere.
So they kind of, like, adjusted it and evened it.
And I used silver spray paint, and you can't duplicate that.
Yeah.
So they used a gray But it just worked.
Right. No, they're
it was great, dope. Man. It was great.
So okay, so I know this is your you had a studio or you had another studio. One of the things I know, and we're gonna wrap this up. I got a few more questions to ask you, but we could talk for fucking hours here. Was that I read somewhere that when you were younger, you didn't have a studio and you painted up in the roof
on the rooftop
in your building,
correct.
And that every day you got up and you treated it as a job.
Correct. I still do. I get up. Even though I'm going to work at home, I get up, I take a shower, I put on my clothes, and I go downstairs and I work. I have to, it's a thing that I not to take for granted, you mm-hmm. know.
It's a discipline.
And it's something that I think every, whether you're a musician, a writer, whatever it is, you know, all musicians, they play, you know, even if they're just doodling, they play. Writers, you know, if you're not writing, you're formulating, or, you know, but it's always writing. Painting is the same thing. I might not use spray paint every day, but I'll do some ink drawings, maybe some watercolors. I'll do some acrylics, you know. But
every day you're doing something.
There's something because I don't think creativity ends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can go out 3 weeks on holiday,
mm-hmm.
you know, on vacation, somewhere on the beach, but you come back and you got all that stuff stolen, mm-hmm. and you're like, boom.
Mm-hmm.
As an artist, your life should be a diary.
Mm-hmm. See, I was going to ask you what advice you have for younger artists, but I think that kind of covers it right there.
Yeah, man.
And I was going to ask you about, like, spray painting technique, but I would probably gather that would fall under the same answer that you gave me, practice.
Practice, man. Spray painting is not an easy medium.
Hell fucking no. And you guys actually develop spray caps to make them fatter so that you can fill in more area faster.
Well, in the beginning, we realized that all these companies had different nozzles, like the ones that we used to love with spray starch, Niagara spray starch. Their nozzle was a wide thing. So when we used to paint with that, you cover like a foot long path of color as opposed to just using the little ones.
So Niagara spray starch, that's fucking not spray paint, but it's spray.
Right.
So
that's nozzle. But then you also had Jafoam. Jafoam was a product that you used to clean ovens. You know, you spray.
Yeah.
So those caps.
Those had a wider spray.
So like,
wow.
You know.
See, look at that shit. Yeah, that's awesome. So recently you did a wall on Houston Street in Lower Manhattan. We were talking about this earlier, that was Keith Haring's original wall up until what, like 2000 or something?
He did the wall originally in 82, 83.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he repainted it again. And then he did a wall with Days and A1 and Kenny Sharp. There was a whole bunch of guys, and that was in 85, 86. Mm-hmm. And then it went dormant for a while.
What, it was just blank?
It was just blank. People just bombed it. They put stuff on it. It became a sign for a shop down the street. And then in about 2000, they started up again. And started getting artists from around the world to do a wall. When I was approached to the wall, I didn't know this. Charlie Ahern told me this, but I'm the only Graff New Yorker, you know, born and raised in New York, because Keith wasn't.
Right.
The only born and raised in New York artist to do the wall and who also did the subways. No one else had done that wall. Subway rider and no original
New Native New Yorker, right. Because Keith was born in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And the other, I know Los Gemelos were in Brazil.
Brazilian.
A couple other guys.
Shepherd's from L.A.
Right.
Fail, they're from the U.K.
Right.
And on and on. You know, Aiko is Japanese. I just go on and on and on.
Right. So, but real quick, I'm going to post a picture of that wall on the Skid Row Studios site. And whoever's interested, you can Google the Houston Street wall there that Crash did. The fucking thing is humongous.
It's big, man.
And you were telling me earlier that you did that in 3 fucking days.
3 days, man. Freezing, too. I was given 5 days to do it. The Tuesday that the wall was supposed to have been primed, there was a massive storm, rainstorm. So they couldn't do anything Tuesday. Wednesday morning, I was supposed to start. So they started priming the wall Wednesday morning. I got there. The guy was finishing one side, and I was already starting on the other side, you know, outlining. Then Thursday and Friday were really freezing cold. Turns out when I was looking at the weather to find out in terms of painting Saturday, there was a thunderstorm coming in. So I had to finish the wall Friday. And sure enough, it poured Saturday. And it worked out. It was also St. Patrick's Day, so it would have been crazy to try and get into the city.
Right, because it's maddening, 50 million
so
drunken people.
3 days, 3 days.
You guys got to see that wall. It's fucking unbelievable. It's beautiful. You do a lot of cartoon, comic strip type characters. It's got Popeye in it. I love it. It's got a lot of colors, more than eight. Toomey would never have been able to replicate that shit. So we're going to wrap this up real soon, but I wanted to ask you about two major exhibits. One of them is Art in the Streets that happened in Los Angeles, curated by Jeffrey Deutsch. And how was that for you? And were you happy about it? Just generally, you know, what were your feelings about that? I saw it. I loved it.
The exhibition that you saw was very different from what they originally planned. Mm-hmm. They wanted to do 30 artists with different artists representing different parts of the world.
Both East Coast and West Coast, or just the world?
The world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they had Os Gemios from Brazil. They were interested in having me, Lee, and Futura represent the United States. And as time went on, it changed incredibly. I think the catalog was better than the exhibition. I mean, just the way, I mean, for example, they left out Fashimoto, which I don't know how. They only included them in the timeline.
Right, right.
And meanwhile, Fashimoto was
a major integral part of the evolution of...
I mean, more than Patty Astor, you know, and Fun Gallery.
Right.
Not dissing Patty because I love her to death, but Fashimoto was there before them. So you know, that was insane. You know, all the problems with all the guys doing installations, you know, all the problems that came up with that was kind of weird.
Because there were quite a few installations there. But I think a lot of those were from the West Coast, right? Yes. Artists from the West Coast?
Well, I mean, even the guy that did the Blade piece, he's from the West Coast.
Oh, the Blade, yeah.
I didn't go to the opening because it bothered me that there were a lot of people who should have been in the show and they weren't in the show.
Mm-hmm. So you kind of boycotted in a sense?
You could say that. Yeah, you could say that. It's just, you know, there were a lot of people that shouldn't have been in the show.
Right.
So, you know.
When I saw the show, my take on it was I kind of like the historical content. I wasn't aware about the fashion motor, but it makes sense.
They
were talking about it. I thought there were some people in there that really didn't contribute that much to the evolution of graffiti. And they not only were they there, but they put a lot of emphasis or they gave them a lot of props. So I was like, I don't know why he's here and like somebody else isn't here. Who should have been there that wasn't there?
Days
had a little small painting in there. That was an afterthought.
Maybe it wasn't asked.
Yeah.
Doves.
I was wondering why Days only had a small little painting there.
Doves.
Doves Green. These are all East Coast artists. And Days, Chris Days Ellis is your partner. You guys, you've been sharing studio space with Days from the get-go, huh? Right.
He's my baby mama. we've been sharing studios since about 83. Yeah.
Right. And I'm definitely going to interview Days in depth another time because I can't interview him in 10 minutes. He's another crazy fuck, but a totally prolific and amazing artist as well. So Doves Green, Days, and who else?
Wow. Those are the first two that come to mind.
All right, I don't have to put you on the spot. Yeah, that's cool, too, guys. And then the other thing that kind of pissed me off was the Whitney Museum of Contemporary Art here in New York City did a similar exhibit, but it wasn't about street art. It was A Century of Art, if I remember correctly, was the title of it.
Wow, yeah, right. And
not one of you guys were included in that.
No, actually, that was the Museum of Art and Art. And the only way...
No, I'm talking about the Whitney.
That's the one that they had Henry's photos. That's the only
They had Keith Haring and they had Henry Chalfant, yeah.
Right. And then to appease us, they decided to do a thing downstairs.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, it was a lecture. A lecture? Yeah, a talk.
Oh, a lecture. Yeah.
And a whole bunch of us were there talking. That's what they decided to do.
Yeah, I thought maybe they would incorporate graffiti with Marcel Duchamp and have you guys paint the urinal.
Armut 17, that was how you signed the urinals.
But for me, I was like, whoa, a century of art. Well, then how come not even one of these fucking guys that have contributed? Nope. I mean, when you talk about art and you're talking about the art movement in general, I mean, you cannot omit... the graffiti movement
the political issue, you know, is what came about because remember the Whitney, Guggenheim, they all get money from the government to help.
They get grants and subsidies.
And we're talking about an art form that was
criminal.
Yeah.
It originated in criminal activity.
Yes.
Which is how he started the interview.
Correct.
Yeah. So I was a little pissed off. On the other end of the spectrum, I'm not a big fan of the Whitney Museum. I think it's a little too stuffy. I mean, museums in general are.
Whitney,
yeah. I've been to it. The only good thing to come out of the Whitney for me in terms of the best exhibit I've ever seen there, there were two, Carol Walker and Keith Haring, the Keith Haring retrospective.
The Basquiat was nice, too.
I didn't see the Basquiat there. I saw the Basquiat in L.A., and I did see the Keith Haring there, and I was fucking blown away. And I did see the Keith Haring retrospective in San Francisco. I thought the New York one was way better.
Yeah. You know, Carol Walker's amazing, too. But
Carol Walker's fucking out of control.
The Basquiat show was hot.
Yeah. The Basquiat show in L.A. was unbelievable. Yeah. I was never a fan of Jean-Michel Basquiat until I saw that. Yeah. I got it.
Yeah, because if you just see two or three, it doesn't make sense. But when you see it, and it becomes like a diary.
Right.
You can read it, and you can see everything he's went through.
Right, you get him.
Yeah, then you're like, whoa.
Right, you're blown away.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. I think I've kept you in one place for a long time. So I want to thank you so much for giving me the opportunity on Nestorius Public Radio to get a little in depth in you and your work and your life.
I appreciate it.
Go see that wall on Houston Street. Google Crash, John Crash Matos. Google Fashion Moda, and we out. Thanks for tuning in to Nestorius Public Radio. Make sure you go to SkidRowStudios.com. Check out the rest of the shows on there. There's some pretty live stuff. Make sure you go to iTunes. While in iTunes, search for Nestorius Public Radio and subscribe. Tell your friends. Hey, I'm getting stickers made up with the QR codes to iTunes and to the Facebook page. We're blowing shit up. You know what I mean?
Yo, we're blowing up. We got stickers. We're getting packaged Twizzlers. We're getting twirlers. We're fucking getting strippers. Fuck that shit, son.
Hookers.
Yeah, we're doing it all, man. Yo. We're gonna shrink wrap my fucking SUV. It's gonna be amazing. You're gonna be rolling around. I'm gonna get a T-shirt gun. I'm gonna do a drive-by T-shirt gun shooting.
Yeah. Make sure you tune into The Breaks. TheBreaks on smodcast.com.
As well as thebreaks.net.
Thebreaks.net. That's the Breaks website. I've been doing the show with James for about 2 years. And don't forget, while you're at it, check us out on Facebook / Nestorius Public Radio, Twitter, Nestorius NYC, and then our new website, NestoriusPublicRadio.com. All right?
We'll see you in Club 33, bitches. Encourage me to hold.